Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Paulette Young. I'm speaking. We'll certainly be joined by a few others. What we're going to talk about tonight is HIV, and talk about the seven cities around the United States, where the numbers are, and some of the whys. We're going to compare HIV in Los Angeles County to six other cities throughout the United States. And those cities are Chicago, Houston, New York City, San Francisco, Philadelphia, and District of Columbia. Los Angeles County alone spans 4,084 square miles. This includes urban and rural areas, 88 incorporated cities, and approximately 140 unincorporated areas. Los Angeles County is significantly larger than six major cities in the U.S., the ones that I had already mentioned. It's also heavily burdened by HIV and other sexually transmitted infections. And so we lead the way when it comes to this HIV crisis. In 1993, the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors approved the county's 26th health district, and they changed it into what you call eight service area. They call it SPA, service planning area. And there was eight of them. And the eight service planning areas include, you have SPA 1, that's the Antelope Valley. You have SPA 2, that's San Fernando Valley. You have SPA 3, that's the Metro or Los Angeles and North Hollywood area. You have SPA 5, that's West. SPA 6 is South. SPA 7 is East. And SPA 8 is South Bay. Of those that I named, the one that's heavily populated, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but that has a large amount of HIV cases is SPA 4, and that's Los Angeles, and North Hollywood, those areas. The second one to lead is SPA 8. When I say SPA, I'm talking about service planning area, and that's South Bay. And then the third one would be the San Fernando Valley. And they put them in clusters so they can see what type of service are needed in the various areas so they can better service the population. But the largest, as I said, of people living with HIV is in SPA 4, and that is Los Angeles. And then followed, as I mentioned before, by what they call SPA 8, that's service planning area, and that's South Bay. And the second one, or the other one on the list, is San Fernando Valley. And then they said, so Los Angeles is the most disproportionately impacted with the highest rate of HIV per 100,000, followed by number 8, which is South Bay, and number 6, which is San Francisco. So new diagnosis is showing up, say, in the Los Angeles area. The highest rate followed is the highest, and again, 6 and then 8. There's a new shift, they said, in the epidemic with a growing population of newly diagnosed persons in the in what they call SPA 6, which is San Francisco. We don't know why the increase. It was found that 82.3% of all new HIV cases were located in one of the five cluster areas, with the largest number in central and south cluster. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. The five cluster areas that they identify: north, that'd be Lancaster, Palmdale, northeast, San Fernando Valley, central, again, that's your Los Angeles area, east is Pomona, south is city of Long Beach, and portions of South Los Angeles. It was found that 82.3% of all new HIV cases were located in one of these five cluster areas, with the largest number to the in the central and south cluster, which is, again, that's Los Angeles and that's Long Beach. When analysis is complete, which is, they said it's supposed to be complete in 2016, instead of them saying SPA, they're supposed to switch over to saying cluster. But they still say SPA, because I go to different meetings and it says service planning area. It doesn't, they will say cluster, but they're still identifying it as service planning area. As of 2014 in Los Angeles, we have 58,503 living with HIV. This does not include those who have never been tested, because Center of Disease Control stated one in five are positive and has never been treated. The majority of your people living with HIV are from communities of color. So the minorities, if we don't get more education out there to the people, they're being wiped out. For example, in the L.A. County area, Los Angeles, Latino or Hispanic accounts for 41.8% of all people living with HIV in L.A. County, and 46.2% of recently diagnosed. Blacks or African Americans is 20.2% of all of those that are living with HIV, and 22.8% of recently diagnosed. And then the Latino Hispanic make up 48.2% of the population of L.A. County. Blacks only make up 8.6% of the general county population. People living with HIV are older, with the largest portion being between 59 years old. That's 60.1%. That's high. Recently diagnosed, younger, with the majority of them being, is 61.3% between age 20 and 39 years of age. That's we're in a crisis, and there's not enough talking about it. Nearly one third, that's 32.6% of all recently diagnosed persons are young adults, 20 to 29 years old. We're going to have to continually talk about this, because we are in a crisis. I asked my professor, that's my mentor, Dr. Phillips, she's a microbiologist and virologist. I said, will they ever use the word pandemic? And she said, no. It's just never going to be used. They will say epidemic, because pandemic means it's out of means it's out of control. And I keep wondering if we're already there because of the numbers. Hi, Selena. I see you're on the line now. How are you?
Fine, you?
Good. And we have I want to say Phyllis. She's on my line. Philip, look at me. I can't pronounce your name. Philippa is on the line also. Selena, you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself? And we'll just keep on talking. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah, well, currently a entrepreneur, and basically what I do is technically run a number of different nonprofit agencies which address matters that go on in the community, and a retired CPA, and that sort of wraps it up.
All right. And then, Philippa, you want to tell the audience a little bit about you, or you don't have to, but if you want to.
Oh, sure. I'm retired. I retired from USC. I was the executive director, School for Early Childhood Education. Early education has been my career. And most recently, I'm involved with, I'm on the board of a number of organizations, the Nehemiah Project, which is dealing with children coming out of foster care into adulthood, so the transitional foster children. And also I'm dealing, and also I'm working with Early Learning Alliance, which is a early childhood education advisory committee. And that consists of 12 different state preschool programs. And I keep myself busy with the Empowerment Congress under Mark Willie Thomas. So those are some of my projects.
That's a lot.
It's enough.
Okay. Lena, you wanted to jump in? I know I gave some of the numbers for what's going on.
Well, you gave
quite. Oh, I forgot fathers and families.
Yeah, don't forget that one.
Yeah, and I'm a volunteer with Fathers and Families Coalition of America.
Yes, and they have a large conference coming up May 4th through the 7th.
March.
If you go up on my website, and then for this broadcast, I listed their website and telephone number.
Oh,
the
good.
20th annual conference.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, because it's important. Okay, go ahead, Selena.
Yes, you did mention quite a few of the numbers, which can sort of rattle your brains around, because basically, the way they do it, they group these things into various different categories. And some of the numbers you were talking about were from basically 2014, which the biggest part of the so-called report, as they say, is, and as you were saying, they won't say it's pandemic, because guess what? The numbers are going up, and it's getting more and more complicated, and we're getting more and more people that are actually living with basically, they utilize four different stages, you know, 1, 2, 3, and of course 8. And also, they're, like you say, they're not talking about it because they're squashing down other places which are actually still. The United States, which is the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and the Northern Mariana Islands. All of these are a part of us, and they continually, in a sense, not really tell the truth. And the two most staggering ages to me is, first of all, 13 through 14. And again, a real knockout punch when you get to 65 and older, because I don't know why people think old folks don't do anything but sit on the porch and knit. And these numbers tell us a lot more than that is going on. It just has to be. And it's when you see that, that's just really ridiculous, because you know, the common conversation is when, you know, you talk about homosexuals and, you know, heterosexual contact, whether it's male or female, you know, they break it down into whether or not, you know, we have Latinos, whites, black, or Hispanic. But again, the most staggering information, when you get to, you know, the by age, and you find out your largest group is age 25 and 36. No, we can't talk about this enough. Yeah, because
there needs to be more education
just
in the schools, and the churches need to get on board. They really do, because it would make a difference. Because they have a captive audience, and their people will listen to them. You can get this information out to them where they may not go to a seminar, or they may not listen to a podcast. A lot of them are in church. And I really believe the churches need to address HIV. It's not about the needs of the devil.
Well, absolutely. They tend to think that, Jesus is just on he's looking the other way. And the real truth here is the people are doing this, and it is just getting to be at just horrific rates. And, as they say, what's done in the dark will soon come to the light, and what's coming to the light is just not nice.
Mm-hmm. I think also the health education courses that are taught in high school as well as in colleges should do some more information on safe sex and the prevention of the spread of AIDS. And I'm not sure if that's actually done in high schools, and I'm not sure in colleges as well, because you do have a large population of young, and I think that would be effective if they did do more education in terms of protecting yourself and safety and practicing safe sex in college in particular, as well as in high school.
And they need to begin not with the students, the teachers. The teachers aren't educated well enough to present the material. There needs to be a lot of things. Because I remember when I was at Gary High School, and I was invited to talk about HIV. I talked about the testing procedure, the necessity, how to prevent and from getting it and how you get it. Because a lot of them still don't know, even through passionate kissing, if that person has that particular disease, you still can get it. I don't care if it's a small percentage. Nobody's going to want to kiss someone that has HIV and think they can't get it. Yes, you can.
Right.
So that kind of education needs to be done. Because I remember listening, when I was on their campus, I was listening to a group of teachers. They were talking, and they felt inadequate. And so if they feel inadequate, then something has to be done about educating the teachers in a way that they can educate the students. Because if they're not getting the information or understanding it, then that's a problem. That's a huge problem. And I know each school that I've gone in so far, the students, I've only gone into the high schools, but they're upset because I give them the information. They says, why isn't anyone telling us? I let them know the plan.
Is that part of
what?
The certification program you do?
No, I do a certification program for the HIV. That one's a little bit longer than what I'm giving the students. The way I was able to schools was through there's times they want people like me fire the students to go to college. So they want me to talk about what I do. And one of the things I talk about is I talk about HIV/AIDS awareness and, other things. I started off letting them know about my background with high school, challenges in college, and what led me to be where I am today. And but what I have found, the students are angry because they're not given the information. Give them the information.
Oh, I see.
They can make a healthy choice. They don't like it. Some of them never had sex, but they're putting their mouth into every mouth out there and some other things too. And there's a lot, and while we have that lack of understanding, that's not good.
Right.
They then they're able to make a healthy choice. But if you don't have the information, how are you going to make a healthy choice?
Right. And, some churches are doing more information on sex trafficking because it is impacting communities. And I think they could also tie in safe sex practices along with the awareness around sex trafficking. Because, there's a rise in sex trafficking as well. So it all ties in together.
Yeah, because it's modern-day slavery, but they're getting paid for it. And the kids, I didn't know that the schools were dealing with this. I know various organizations, some of the churches are dealing with sex trafficking. But I didn't know.
Some of the churches are doing it. But, I think, too, making parents aware of having these discussions with their children at home is also critical because, yes, the school can do some information about safe sex and HIV, but also parents can emphasize that more in the home as well.
That's true. Parents, again, enough parents don't know either.
I know. That's why I'm saying, how do we go about educating parents about safe sex practices and so that they can incorporate that in their, their family life?
Right. I have a harder time with parents. I don't have a hard time with the students. And for example, I remember a young kid. He was getting ready to turn 18, and the last thing I was going to tell him about was the HIV. His mom didn't want him to know, and he just looked at his mother. I said, "Little does she know, he knows far more than she could imagine." Like, he wasn't ready. He's getting ready to leave high school, and his mother didn't want him to have the education. And I had to stop because she was in the class, so I couldn't say no more.
Oh, I see.
And for me, that's a tragic. Most of the time, when I do the health fairs, there's a parent there, and I tell them what I'm going to say. I said I don't say anything inappropriate. I don't tell them how to put something on the fan and all that kind of stuff. I give them the facts, what's going to happen to you if you don't make a choice. That seems to impact students more than, the do's and the don'ts, the way the church would handle it. You're not supposed to have sex before marriage. You're not supposed to do this. And even if you didn't have sex before marriage, both partners need to take both tests to make sure no one has the HIV. If you do, then you still have to make a decision what you want to do, and whether you want marriage or not marriage. Some will still marry, others won't. But you need to know, if you're going to get involved in a sexual relationship, kissing relationship, you need to have both standard HIV tests, that's an antibody test. It may not show any results as far as if you're positive or not, and the genetic test, which will show you your HIV status in 10 to 15 days. That's the one that I put up. That's the one that CP for the state of California passed that information when I presented it last April. We presented at the National in Detroit, Michigan in July, so that they can include that in their educational curriculum. And it will make a difference. We have to get the numbers down. I didn't realize black people are only 8.6% of LA County.
Right. Right.
Do you even stand a chance to live? And what happens is, when a minority is surrounded by their race, they think a lot of them, but that's not the truth. It's not a lot of you. 8.6% is low. I had no idea that it was that low.
So how do you know how many organizations are focusing on HIV? Because you don't really hear a lot about HIV since they've come up with the medication and people are not talking about HIV as much as they did back in the 90s.
But the only reason it's not being talked about, when Reagan was in office, he took all funding away from TV broadcasts, radio, and then in the public's eye, it went away, but it never did. It kept growing. Yes, mm-hmm. You have more that live longer, but we need to talk about those that ain't living so long, especially the
youth.
And it's costing the medical system lots of money. So I think we should focus on prevention. And then they came up with, personally, I thought was crazy. You came out with a pill that the person that don't have HIV will take 365 days out the year so that they don't come down with it if your partner has it. The problem is I felt the medication hadn't been studied long enough, and now you got all kind of lawsuits saying it causes kidney failure. Here's a person don't have HIV taking something that's going to destroy their liver. So, and then only this 71% of the black Americans said no, they didn't want to take that pill or take a chance. Thank the lucky star, because now it's in the news that it causes kidney failure. So you would have had essentially a person that has nothing wrong with them take this medicine, and now you created a problem.
Yeah.
You know, some of these medicines, they haven't studied long enough, and they quickly put it on the market because this is a cure-all. And then the problem with taking the medicine, like birth control pill, you miss taking it the way you're supposed to, what happens? You get pregnant. You do that with that HIV patient, and again, you end up with the HIV.
Let me ask you something. In your reading, did it talk about people are practicing safe sex more now over the last 20 years, you know, since it's talked about a lot about using condoms, but I'm wondering if people are really using condoms as much as they were hoping that people were using condoms. Because I know in the 80s and the 90s, they really pushed condoms. I don't know if they're still pushing condoms, if there was an increased use.
Yes. Condom is still being pushed, yes. And more people are using condoms, and that may be some of the reason why those that are living longer, but you still have to focus on certain areas, or they call them clusters instead of the spa now. Certain clusters, the numbers are too high.
Again, I think it's, again, the education, because Paulette, as she's gone into high schools and gone on the stage, they're usually shocked when you actually tell a teenager, you can get this, go ahead and kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is really getting that information out there because of this transference of fluid.
Because
what's getting squashed is information, is the big fact. The big fact. It's simply, and everybody wants to hide. They're hiding with this. And as Paulette said, the real condition is called, it costs the medical industry a lot of money. Because, again, they think of the definitive test is simply one test, and it's not. The only people that are doing it again and again and again, and we cannot stress enough, is Army, Navy, Marines, and the American Red Cross, those that do blood, because they have to do more than one test. But also they're keeping the information under a lid, which says, just go ahead and slobber over anybody you want.
Right. Because now they used to do that, they were doing more recently, like at health fairs, they might do, you know, they have the HIV mobile unit that will come out and test you, but they're doing just the swab, you know, in your mouth.
Yeah,
and
that's not good enough.
Right, because initially they were doing blood, they would draw your blood and test your blood to find out if you had HIV.
Right.
And then they move to you.
But when they do the blood test, or no, when you donate blood to Red Cross.
I'm not talking about donating blood. I said initially when AIDS came out, the way that they detected if you had AIDS is really by blood, you know, testing your blood. But then they moved to doing the swab, you know, the swab on the cheek to see if you were HIV positive.
Yeah, but see, and it may show that you're negative because your body has to build up enough antibodies for it to read positive. And if it doesn't build up enough antibodies, it says you're negative and you might be positive. So you will spread the disease. That's the problem with doing the antibody test. That's why I've been advocating for, I don't know how many years now, that second test needs to be done. And then the other thing is somebody with risky behavior that don't know they have it because they only had that first test, now they're continually the disease itself. It makes not even common sense, especially when you have a test that can tell you in 10 to 15 days. Why isn't that test being used?
Right.
Along with the antibody test. And they did,
I don't know. The only thing I could think of is that they're trying to reach more people using the swabbing of the person's, you know, cheek or whatever they were doing. And they do them at health fairs, or they do them, they have the mobile units that go out. Doctors don't routinely do it. I think they do it on pregnant women now. They check them for HIV when a woman's pregnant. But, you know, I just don't see where they take the HIV mobile units to high schools or, you know, the only place I've really seen them is at community fairs, health community fairs.
I'll tell you what the high schools have been doing when they'll have blood drive. When they have a blood drive, they are automatically, they get both tests.
Yeah.
Especially up here where in the Inland Empire, there at least once or twice out of the year, some of the high schools do have blood drive. Well, it's a win-win because, one, you'll know that you're not or if you are, and then, two, they need blood. So if you are, you definitely need that blood, the good blood. So, and they've had lots of that up here. And I think every health fair, when a person have one, should have Red Cross there and donating blood. So that you'll know your status, that's for sure. But the other thing, if your blood is good, Red Cross is a win situation because they don't get enough blood anymore the way they used to.
Yeah.
And it needs to be a push. I mean, two things I would love to see pushed: health fairs all the time, and
Paulette, let me ask you: in your reading, did they talk about the prison population, the rate of HIV and AIDS in prison population?
Yes, it's high. I don't know if people are surprised. It's high. They need more even education with the prisoners. Just because they're in prison, I feel personally, and just through my reading, there is not enough education. The educational part needs to be higher.
And also, there's a disguise because they They don't necessarily say where they are, but they may say, CDC makes the statement because they'll say diagnosis.
Right.
And then they categorize it into colors. I like to say it that way. And that's tragedy, but as we well know, that's the way they tamp it down.
Mm-hmm.
Watered down situation. And that's why this thing is getting pandemic, is because they're watering it all down, and
right.
they're just making people aware that, for instance, like this morning, on ABC, they were trying to show children how a cold is spread. Well,
right,
ideally, you see that. If they do the same thing in terms of HIV, this is how it's spreading, literally.
Absolutely. And they really should have a lot more education in that area.
That's what's happening. You know, if they do that and say, okay, now we're going to shine this light. Now look how many people in this room got.
Just a minute.
That's how it's spreading. And they go to a water fountain and say, this is the nastiest place in the building.
Exactly.
You know, this is what's going on. This is what's happening for real. And this water is down. I mean, because, you know, what high school, what public place wants to say the water fountain is this is where you can catch everything in under the sun right here.
Yeah, but you can't catch HIV from a water fountain.
No, I'm not necessarily saying that. What they had was a place where people are actually putting their mouths and transferring fluids onto their hands by coughing and things like this, and it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, needs to be more education between the schools, educating the parents, and the church needs to be involved.
Yeah, but now who in L.A. County... What major agency is doing a lot, you know, is handling the HIV education? I know at Martin Luther King across the street, Dr. Jordan has been doing HIV information. In fact, he has an HIV clinic right across the street from Martin Luther King Hospital, but he's also been doing a lot of education around HIV. Do you know Dr. Jordan?
No, I haven't.
I'm aware of Dr. Jordan, and also when you go into the city of Compton, South Bay, there are a number of different agencies that are working hard. They're trying to get it out there, and they're trying to help those that don't have it and those that are already impacted with it, and giving them some kind of help. Because one of the big things that happens, and of course with, you know, Dr. George there, is that they're unaware of where they can get help, because some things, it used to be prolific in terms of, it was kind of easy to find a, what they call a county health center. Well, those things are now shut down, the majority of them. You know, it used to be a public place that you could go to, just as well as there's super gonorrhea going around. You know, there's there used to be a place that you could easily go to, but that doesn't exist anymore. So these people have been very prolific in being sure that these people get some kind of help. And there are other agencies, such as if you get up around USC, then they have a thing that's put up by the foundation. And, you know, they're getting out there, passing out information. In addition to that, then you have Kaiser, the Kaiser thing, they do it under something called the Kaiser Family Foundation, and they do a tutorial.
And they also
list data that you can find.
I was at a thing, I said I should have been the guest speaker, not that person from Kaiser. I was insulted because I was really disappointed because the person that came out had literature from 1986. And she wasn't speaking current. And I thought that was a total insult. And then the audience was a bunch of minorities. So I was angry. I went up to her. And the other problem is no one, unless you're somebody like me, talk about both tests. and the importance of getting both tests. Because even the Dr. Jordan you talk, he's not going to talk about that second test. He only talks about the first. And, yes, that is good, but it's not good if the person is still positive. I have a problem with that. How are you going to get the numbers down if the very test they took ain't showing nothing and you're telling them to come back 3 months, 6 months to a year later, that there's something wrong with all that? And then, and that doctor knows that the occupational safety people who they look to for what's the latest guidelines haven't updated their guidelines since 2005. So I have a problem with all that. See, I speak freely because I'm not bound by nobody's grant, nobody. I'm not sure if they can only talk about, you know, what the occupational safety people said, which they, the doctors themselves that are running the show, know it's an error. They know that the procedure, you need to do both tests. Because I did a survey at Kaiser can't do the second test, period, unless the first test shows positive. And I told the doctor, that's an error. He said, yes, it is. He says, they have to follow occupational safety. I said, and they haven't. I did all my homework because I had a hard time finding out what OSHA had to say about it. And the only way I got that information is someone, I was doing a training for them, and they happened to work for OSHA. I said, I've tried for 8 months. I had all the connections, and nothing's been sent my way. He sent me.
Paulette, I would recommend with, you know, you providing data as you did tonight, but also providing resources for your audience so that they might be able to find out where they can get the education or where they can get tested. You know, as a follow-up to this broadcast, I would just strongly recommend that you include, you know, where people can get information or where people can get training or where people can get tested.
Oh, okay. I will do that. The audience that's listening now, even though Red Cross don't want you to have donate blood because you want to know your HIV status, but you need to know if your blood's good or not because it's free. Skin test you have to pay for it. But if you don't see blood, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I'm proud of the NAACP for passing my HIV resolution to include the importance of getting both tests, not just the one, and the difference in the two tests, so we can get those numbers down. My next step is going to be to go after the politicians. That's going to take longer for legislation requiring both tests. OSHA needs to upgrade standards, but I've already been told money's involved. That's why there's no change. So we're looking at it. But if the minorities aren't aware, we can become extinct just like an animal. This is serious. If that count that they showed with the county is accurate, and there's only 8.6% of blacks in the L.A. County, that's bad. And Latinos, you know, even though they're at 48%, but look at the numbers for the HIV. It's too high. I feel we're at a crisis right now, a crisis that we got to wake up. Those of us that have the information have to give it, you know, to the people on a more massive scale. I know I've been invited to Los Angeles for that. They're called the Black Task Force. They're tied into Martin Luther King Hospital and the research there.
I just wanted to say, now that you mentioned Martin Luther King, the Empowerment Congress out of Mark Willie Thomas's office is having their annual Empowerment Conference this Saturday coming up, and I'm sure they're going to have some information because they're going to have the health department there as well.
But they're not going to talk about both tests. They're not going to do that. They're not going to talk about the importance of both tests. They're
going to
talk about
They are going to have the health department's going to have a booth at the Empowerment Congress this Saturday.
And I wish I can come to that. Because
at Martin Luther King Hospital.
Text me the information.
Okay, you have to go online to register. It's the Empowerment Congress, and they have a conference, but you have to register in advance online.
Oh, okay. But I know Philippa, they're not going to talk about the both tests.
They probably will not, but they may have some information about where people can find out more about AIDS or HIV.
Yes, they'll do that. But in all that information, no one's going to talk about both tests. No one. It's not popular.
Yeah, for except maybe Dr. Jordan.
I bet you he don't. I would even bet you he won't.
Because he's been crusading about HIV for over 30 years.
Yes. They know. I'm telling you, they know.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't they give that information to the public?
Oh, I don't know.
You know, just give the information that Center of Disease Control. Do you know that Center of Disease Control in 2007 put it up on their website? The best method was taking both tests. So you know that. This is 2019. And it's still not being done.
Yeah.
HMO won't even give the second test, like Kaiser. Because in their curriculum or their rules and regulations, the first test has to show positive. If it doesn't, a doctor cannot get that second test. The one physician that I interviewed at the Claremont Clinic, he said he loses 80% of his patients. They're dead. They can't be treated. And the sooner you get treatment, the better off you are. If you can't get treatment right away, you may not make it.
Right, that's it.
See, and so that is a dilemma. When will that change? This is 2019. And even when I started doing the AIDS walk, and the lady, I said, can I be honest while I'm here? So when I'm on that street walking, I let people know to take both tests and the difference in the testing procedures and why.
Yeah. Paulette, I vaguely remember that when AIDS first came out, didn't health workers have to be tested for AIDS?
Yeah.
They were working in a hospital setting or something like that.
If you were in a hospital and you had a needle stick, you were tested. If something
right.
went wrong, were tested.
Right.
But
so,
in the earlier,
I wonder if they still do that.
Do what? Yeah, they have to be tested if you get a needle stick or a
No. I'm saying as a screener, when you're being hired to work in a hospital, I remember years ago I thought that the health professionals had to take AIDS screenings to be employed.
No. Not in
no.
the early days.
Okay.
I don't know about now. You have
they got
areas rid- that may require it, but no. There's no rules.
No, they got rid of it with laws that said it's invasion of privacy.
Yeah, only if you get exposed.
Yeah, if you get exposed, what do? They have you coming back and forth. Say that's your husband. He got bit. He's in the hospital working. He got bit by the patient. So he's going to get the test, but it's the antibody test. They're not giving them the second test.
Oh.
Our employee don't know that. When they hear me talk, they're, and I said, in that position you work for, know everything that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And you have hospital after hospital. You can walk in any hospital, ask one of those workers what the procedure is when they get a needle stick, and they will say, well, they test me, and then I come back 3 months, 6 months. As soon as they say, come back 3 months,
because
you know they did not have the real deal, the genetic test. But that's the format, because OSHA is what the hospitals follow. It's sad. And every physician out there knows the importance of taking that second test right away.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not accepted yet. It's the people that don't know. And if enough people know, there'll be enough pressure, then there'll be a change. To me, it's human injustice of a different kind.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, to continue what's going on. And that number's going to keep not going down like it should, because the testing procedure is wrong. Now, when they have me talk, I'll be talking just the way I talk here. And I know there'll be some of the physicians there, but at least one thing I know for sure, they all know. Those at the higher part know. It's not their ignorance. They're just following what OSHA tells them to do.
Yeah.
Something barbaric. Like, you know, you haven't upgraded since, I have the documents, they haven't upgraded since 2005. That's a long time. So, you know, who's at advantage for wiping out, you know, and people think I'm kidding. I'm serious. You can wipe out a whole race. Your numbers are down. I mean, not that many of you are here anyway. Keep that disease process going, you'll be gone.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not the fault of Center of Disease Control, because they already said that this is inhumane. They've already made their statement. But
mm-hmm.
they don't legislate anything. They just give information. But the people need to know, just like Nelson Mandela, until the people knew what was going on in that country, no one did anything. But as soon as
mm-hmm.
it took years for that information to spread throughout, but as soon as enough knew, then, the boycott places like Pepsi or some of our goods were sitting over there, well, boycott you, you know, you were hitting them in the pocketbook. Now they listen. And they don't need to do no more tests. Prove all that I say. They don't. They'll say, well, we got to do some research. You don't need no research. There was one study in Arizona. Well, the physician just took it upon himself. He had 35 clients come there. He felt that they were all HIV positive based on their risky behavior that they've already performed. And 25 tested positive. The others didn't. And he knew for sure they were all positive. So he gave the second test. The other 10, they were all positive. So something's wrong. And do we need another? We got to do some research to prove these things? No. They already know.
Mm-hmm.
The people. And I'm more after the youth, because we're getting ready to wipe out our youth, period. So, you know, there needs to be, the teachers need to be educated in a way that they could present it, you know, in a healthy way. Parents will accept it. I haven't had a parent that didn't accept the way I present it, because I don't talk about things.
Yeah.
I talk about this is what happened when you do this. Get tested.
Okay.
And that seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe if the students knew, some people just kind of give up on the kids. I don't. I believe if they had the information, you would have doing the right choice versus the wrong choice. I really believe that. Anyway, we've been on. Anybody still listening? We're talking HIV in Lake County versus the other places. LA County is higher. Well, population-wise, there's more, too, but we are at, I'll have to say, they said epidemic, but you be the judge. Because today I can go in any place and someone will say, oh, yeah, my uncle had it. Oh, my aunt had it. Oh, my nephew. That didn't used to be the case, say, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the case. I don't care where you go, grocery store, sit in the clinic waiting room. Someone there, more than one person will say somebody they know is affected by HIV. That wasn't the case in the beginning. So we're on every Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific time. All you have to do is call 858-769-4936. Press 1, and you're on the air around the world. And, Selena, I know you don't have much time to talk because we're going to talk past the time we should have. So you still want to give at least a couple of the organizations name?
We'll do three right quick. Number one. Okay, number one, Veterans Care Solutions, which is run by LaShonda Jones. Please call area code 909-329-8288. The second one is called I'm Sick and Tired of Being Sick and Tired. That is run by Kathy Braxton, located at 290 East D Street in Colton, California. If you'd like more information, please call 562-313-0041. And last but not least would be Sowing Seeds for Life, in which I am a director. Paulette is usually out there doing what she does, healthcare consulting, at 1350 Arrow Highway in Laverne, California. Our website is the same as its name, Sowing Seeds for Life with the four spelled all the way out, .org. You can go to our website. If you'd like to donate or come out and volunteer, please call Fran Robinson at area code 909-293-7735, extension 3232. Have a great night.
You like a shout out for the conference that's coming up?
Oh, that's the Empowerment Conference sponsored by Mark Willie Thomas's office. It's going to be held at Martin Luther King Hospital from 8 to 4, and they're going to have about 50 agencies with resource information. But you do have to register online with the Empowerment Congress so that they can get a count, because it's a free lunch and it's a free breakfast.
Okay. Thank you, Philippa. And go ahead, Selena, close us out.
Okay, we thank you for listening to our show tonight. Every time we do a show, I usually make a real quick comment, and that comment kind of goes something like this. I'd like to say, I choose to speak out because silence is consent. I am a self-complained change agent. Yes, I am an agitator. I choose to be provocative. Speaking out raises tough issues, and sometimes it makes people uncomfortable. However, I choose to make some people uncomfortable. I try hard. I take risks and use myself as a guinea pig, and I share my weakness and my mistakes. I have a basic belief, and that belief is to help those who can't help themselves. And I'd like to say to all of you within the sound of my voice, we thank you for listening to our broadcast tonight, and we look forward to having you with us next week with our next hot topic. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Bye.
Good night.